Now the forecast from the National Weather Service on this Wednesday, January 9th. Partly sunny, windy, and seasonal. Today's high 23 with winds up to 20 miles per hour. Right now, wind northwest at 14, 18 degrees in Racine, 19 in Kenosha. The wind chill in single digits at 6 above. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Coming up on 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. JackandDrea.com. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and I am happy as I can be to be sitting across the table from Michael Burke, who is the business reporter for the Racine Journal-Times. And Michael Burke has joined us a number of times on the morning show, and for each and every visit, I've been very, very grateful. And certainly the last couple of times he's joined us, it has been to talk about what is the biggest story that he has ever and perhaps ever will cover as a journalist, the development of Foxconn here in southeastern Wisconsin. And Mick is with us today to talk about Foxconn, kind of where we are in the grand scheme of things, how things have unfolded thus far. Have they unfolded according to plan, according to schedule, and what is ahead? And beyond Foxconn itself, which is, of course, in and of itself a massive development, a massive phenomenon, what about the ancillary effects on southeastern Wisconsin, particularly the positive effects in terms of a stimulus for growth and development, and also some of the issues and difficulties that have been part of this as well and all but unavoidable when a company locates such a huge operation in a place like Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin. It's been a big story. I very much have appreciated reading Michael Burke's reporting of it in the Journal Times, and I'm happy to have him back on the program. Michael Burke, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
So let's start with a very general kind of overview, and then we're going to dig into more specifics within the Foxconn story. So where are we in kind of the grand arc in terms of how long ago did all of this really officially, clearly begin? And when is all of this supposed to end and or be finished? And where are we in that arc?
Well, it's first of all, it's hard to know where it will end. this Foxconn is nothing if not surprising. I would say 2017 was the year we found out that Foxconn had chosen Mount Pleasant, and it was the year when the contract was signed with the state. It was the year of just discovering that this giant of a company was coming in our direction, and I don't think things got a whole lot further than that in 2017. 2018 was a year when we started to see some of the ways in which Foxconn is going to be operating, and there were a lot of surprises, I would say, in 2018. A lot of surprising announcements, a lot of, I think, really interesting announcements about how Foxconn is finding its future, at least a good part of its future workforce, and plugging into the universities and the colleges of this state. And I'd like to talk more about that whenever you would. It was a year in which we found out that Foxconn is so far appearing to be a fairly good environmental steward. there have been a lot of fears along those lines. 2018 was a year of property acquisitions, and that's been a bit of a sticky wicket for some people, but little by little by little, Foxconn seems to be acquiring the land that it wants, a total of 2,900 some acres. And so this is just obviously unfolding little by little by little, and announcement by announcement by announcement. Even the people at the top of Foxconn sort of, it was interesting for me. I happened to cover the Parkside commencement, winter commencement, and the speaker was Alan Young, who is Foxconn's number one man in America. He's the director of U.S. strategic initiatives for Foxconn, and by the way, a UW-Madison graduate, among other degrees that he has. And even he was, in talking about artificial intelligence, which is part of where they're going with this, you know, this is really entering a new world that not even he can exactly forecast. I mean, it's just at every little glimmer of the future that you get, you realize how uncertain that future really is. It's just, all of this is just absolutely groundbreaking.
And it's happening right here in our backyard.
Yes, and it is. And in physical terms, last year was a year of preparation of what's called Area 1, where the initial manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, will take place. So there was massive, massive earth moving going on in Area 1. And the building of their first building, it's what they call their multi-purpose building. And it was also a year of where there was one weekend, one very hot weekend, where Foxconn had an open house. I don't know if you were able to make it to that or not, but I did. And that was a display of some of their technologies that exist now, and just pretty, I thought, pretty jaw-dropping. So, you know, it was a year of preparation, of many announcements, of little glimpses of where this could be going, and a year of ground preparation. A lot happened in 2018.
Very, very busy, and we'll dig into a few of the specifics. I do want to ask you right off the bat, and this might touch on, I'm guessing it will, a couple of the stories that you might want to specifically highlight, but one of the sources of concern slash consternation for some people is when certain indications have been given that Foxconn's intentions for what happens in Mount Pleasant might turn out to be a little bit different from what was initially announced. I mean, that are they really going to manufacture as much as they were? Are they going to need as many employees as they said they did? Where are those employees going to come from? Maybe not so many from Wisconsin. I mean, various indications have generated some concern. We can probably dig into some specifics later, but just in general, how would you characterize Foxconn in terms of unpleasant surprises of that nature at this point in time?
Well, so much of that, I hate to fall back on this, but so much of that is just yet to be seen. However, there was, when the Wall Street Journal a few months back reported that they had some source indicating Foxconn would be importing workers from overseas, Foxconn, in no uncertain terms, came out and said categorically, that is not true. Our focus is on hiring in Wisconsin, Wisconsin people in Wisconsin. So, you know, until proven otherwise, I'm going to more or less take them at their word. Certainly they brought in people from Taiwan, from Asia initially to lay the groundwork for all of this. Of course, you know, you're not going to have Wisconsin workers in the beginning. You're going to have your own people who you're going to bring in. So they've denied that rumor. The things that, for example, on the subject of environmental concerns, Foxconn has come out and exceeded initial expectations. And one good example was when it announced it had the approval, the permitting to, and the initial expectation of using just under 6 million gallons of water a day. That seems like an enormous amount, and it is an enormous amount, but it was within what the state was allowing to be taken out of Lake Michigan without draining Lake Michigan. Then Foxconn said, made a surprising announcement back in about June, I believe it was, when they said, we're going to have a zero liquid discharge system for our industrial waste. Meaning what they're going to do is they're going to take what would have been effluent going into the Racine wastewater treatment plant. They're going to distill it on site on their campus and then reuse that water and have virtually no industrial discharge to the wastewater treatment plant, thus slashing their expected amount of water usage to about 2.5 gallons a day, I believe it was, and that usage is what's called domestic usage, so that's sinks and toilets and kitchens and things like that.
Wow.
And so that was an example where no one expected that. No one had asked for that. They just said, we're going to do this.
Right.
That's how we're going to operate.
Hmm.
And so I think those kinds of surprises have been very pleasant surprises so far, and that was a big one.
Right. And, of course, it really reminds us that when we are dealing in the arena of extraordinary innovation, that there are bound to be all kinds of surprises, and one hopes that there'll be more pleasant than unpleasant ones as we follow this journey. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Michael Burke, who is business reporter for the Racine Journal-Times and covering this extraordinarily significant story of Foxconn coming here to southeastern Wisconsin. And today we're getting what amounts to an update on the Foxconn story from Michael Burke. So I appreciate, Mick, that you did some homework and actually have looked over some of the biggest stories that you have written about Foxconn since your last visit to the morning show, which was back on June 7th of 2018. I'm embarrassed that I took this long to invite you back, but I'm glad you're here. Actually, I did invite you back, come to think of it, back in the fall.
Yeah, we just had a hard time
getting together. Right, right. Couldn't quite make it work, and then but now you're here, and I think this is nice as we start out 2019. So taking us back then to, let's say, June and July, what would be a couple of important moments in the Foxconn story as you covered it?
All right. Well, I am going to consult my cheat sheet because I don't have your photographic memory.
Right.
Well, there was the official groundbreaking took place in June when the president actually came here. That was set in a couple different places. I happen to be physically located in Area 1 where the work is going on, and that was all of about a 60-second appearance there. And then he moved over to the building that they had already been occupying, and my colleague Ricardo Torres covered that part of it. But, you know, that was the official launch. But immediately following that, was, I alluded to this earlier, was a 2-day open house in the building that Foxconn had taken up, an industrial speculative building that is just off of the frontage road in Mount Pleasant. And I knew there were things going on in there. I didn't quite know what. I drove through there one day and I counted something like 70 vehicles. So I knew there was work going on, but they, previous to this, hadn't been ready to really show what was inside. But but what was inside were a couple of different things. One was their testing of their robotics, and that was sort of screened off. You could see it, but you couldn't touch it. But where they're testing the robotics they're going to use in manufacturing. But then there were many, many, many different stations where they were just showing the technologies of the day and the technologies that Foxconn has and the amazing sharpness of their display screens, and there was some really fascinating things to see. I think I spent a couple of hours there, and where they also had a tabletop model, 3D model of the campus that they're planning to build. I paced this off. And I estimated this tabletop model to be about 18 feet by 27 feet. So
wow.
It was, yeah, so you could really see it and get an idea of what this whole campus is going to look like. But the technologies they were showing, an example was this particular station where it had four parts to it, and in one part you could hold a virtual kayak paddle, and you were looking at a screen, and it looked like you were going down some white water, and you were paddling, and then you walked around to the next one. But the cool thing was there was this robotic arm in the middle, and it would move from one quadrant to the next quadrant to the next quadrant and just set up the next thing that you saw. So the robotics on display are just fascinating. And Foxconn has shown how with artificial intelligence, which is a big part of what they're talking about getting into, you can teach a robot. So you can take a robotic hand, let's call it, and put it down and pick up something and move that something to another place. And just by having done that, now you've taught the robot, and it will mimic those exact motions. It's hard to convey, but the open house I thought was just stunning in its capabilities and showing where they could be going with various things. One of the most interesting things I think from last year was the announcement of the Smart Cities Smart Future initiative, and this happened sometime last summer, and it was announced at Parkside, and this is an alliance between Foxconn, I'll call it an alliance, and the whole university and college system, the privates, the public, of the technical system of Wisconsin, and Foxconn putting up $1 million in funding or prize money or whatever you want to call it for just good ideas. And this was Alan Young again, who I referred to earlier, making this announcement at Parkside, but they're looking for good ideas. They could be in transportation, in government, in art, in technology. They just want to hear good ideas from the system. And when they find good ideas, then they're going to give money to those students, those professors, those teams, what have you, to say, okay, take that a little bit further. That could lead to obviously it's a stimulus for entrepreneurship that could lead to new companies. So maybe Foxconn will say, we really like that idea. Hey, let's start a company with you guys. But I think it creates this magnetic force of now it gets all the heads turning of all these young people. You know, back to your question of where all these workers going to come from. I think this is really brilliant because it's going to get all those young, inquisitive, intelligent minds thinking toward Foxconn, maybe wanting to go to work for Foxconn or start their own company with Foxconn's backing. The brain drain that we had talked about for pretty much forever in this state, or for decades at any rate, I think that this can be, again, a magnetic force that brings the young people into Foxconn, starts new companies, and, you know, who knows where that can go. But I thought that was one of the most fascinating things that came out last year.
Right. And I think a lot of people, at a glance, didn't get that. I mean, I think it did not make immediate clear sense that, you know, why would they do this? Is this just some nice feel-good PR of some kind? Not realizing, and then it's like the closer you look, the more you realize how significant this could be as a catalyst for all kinds of things, including what you said about drawing young, brilliant minds to this area, and the young, brilliant minds that are already here, drawing them to stay here.
Yeah, and along those lines, another announcement was the announcement of Foxconn pairing up with three other companies to create a $100 million venture fund. I believe it was called the Wisconsin, I have it in my notes somewhere here, but Wisconsin Valley Venture Fund or something like that. So Northwestern Mutual Life, and I don't remember all four companies, but you know, a one back to smart cities, smart future, you know, $1 million seems like a drop in the bucket for the kinds of, you know, the kind of money that Foxconn is spending on all of this. But a $100 million venture fund, you know, that then that's going to fund quite a few companies, get them off the ground.
That's huge.
And so you maybe you find the ideas through the Smart City, Smart Future initiative. Then there's this venture fund that can really support those kinds of initiatives, those kinds of new companies. So those two things working in tandem, I think, you start to see where some of the juice is going to come from for, you know, all of the many unpredictable kinds of things that are going to come out of this. So those were exciting, I thought. And by the way, those other companies were the Advocate Aurora Health and Johnson Controls. Johnson Controls, of course, being in, you know, in the technology realm as
right.
well. And they announced a $100 million partnership with UW-Madison basically a research partnership. So a lot of what was coming out last year wasn't so much, you know, I think too often people think they're building this enormous factory. Well, it's not an enormous factory. It's an entire advanced manufacturing campus. But, you know, not to just focus on that aspect, but all these other things where Foxconn is kind of laying out, you know, a red carpet for where they're going.
Right. And just if I can jump in, I think part of what surprised people about the whole smart cities thing and the other initiative that you thought about is, I think maybe a more standard way of doing things is you build a factory someplace, you get it up and running, you start making things, you start selling things, and then with some of that money that you make, oh, you know, let's give money to the high school and have them name it after us, and let's give some money to expand the library and name it after us or whatever. And here is Foxconn doing all of this at the outset.
Yeah.
Not at the tail end of everything.
Yeah.
And the way you are explaining it helps us understand the sense behind it, that it isn't entirely altruistic, although maybe to some extent it is, but it makes sense for them and the grand picture, the big picture, and the long term to be thinking in these ways.
Yeah, and another thing Foxconn was doing last year, piece by piece, was announcing how much it's investing in innovation. And so first they came out and said, we've bought a historic building in downtown Green Bay. We're going to have an innovation center there. Oh, interesting. You know, it's not all just about Mount Pleasant. And then they did the same thing in Eau Claire. Oh, that's interesting too. Wow, innovation centers in these places where you have universities and you have colleges.
Hours away from here.
Yeah, yes. And I don't pretend to fully understand exactly what those are going to lead to, but it's certainly showing an investment, further investment in Wisconsin. And then in October, early October, at a press conference in downtown Racine, Foxconn announced that it was buying a building at 1 Main Street. It's a three-story building, not fully, in fact, only about half occupied. And Foxconn said, we're going to have an innovation center right here in downtown Racine now. And this will help us with our whole smart city kinds of innovations that we're getting into, where everything is going to be about connectedness. You know, your mm-hmm. phone and your house and almost everything is going to be connected in ways that will really change the way we live. And so Foxconn will be taking about 50% of that building, and plans are still being laid to for exactly what that's going to look like. But they plan to have about 125 people in that building alone. And then just, what was it, last week, I reported
right.
the purchase of a second building in downtown Racine at 601 Lake Avenue, another three-story building, a historic building in that case.
The old Elks Club.
The old Elks Club, right, right. And they haven't let out any details yet about the future for that building, but so now you're going to have a Foxconn building at one end of downtown and at the other end of downtown. And so here's a real investment in the city of Racine. You know, early on, a lot of people were questioning, well, what is the city of Racine exactly going to get out of this? You know, it's a landlocked municipality, and Mount Pleasant's getting all the goodies. You know, Mount Pleasant's getting this $10 billion investment. what's the city going to get other than maybe, you know, some jobs if they're lucky enough to train up people to take the jobs. Well, now Foxconn is showing, oh, well, we're going to be in the city of Racine as well. We're going to be doing things right in your downtown.
Right, and they're going to be eating at Old Madrid and Salute mm-hmm. and getting an ice cream cone at the Sugar Shack and buying yeah. clothes, perhaps, and who knows.
Shop and yeah. All of those things, yeah. So, again, what that's going to feel like after you pump in 100 to 200 additional people in downtown Racine, and who knows? Mm. You know, so much of this is really just yet to be seen.
Of course.
But they're showing we're distributing the wealth a little bit here. It's not just all going to Mount Pleasant.
Right. So the second building that we just talked about, the Old Elks Club, that shares the same city block as Memorial Hall. Mm-hmm. So if people drive towards the lake and there's Memorial Hall and you turn left and then the half of that city yep. block is the Old Elks Club. Where exactly is One Main Center? I've meant to go looking for it, and I haven't done so yet.
That is just before the bridge on the east side of the street. It's the last building you will encounter. If you're walking north on Main Street in downtown Racine, it's the last building you'll get to before you would cross the bridge.
There it is. On yeah. what side of the street?
On the east side of the street.
On the east side of the street.
A modern building built in the last, 10 years or something.
Right. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with Michael Burke, who is business reporter for the Racine Journal-Times, and we are talking about the ways in which Foxconn has shaken things up, of course, with their huge development in the village of Mount Pleasant, and we're talking not only about that, but some of the ancillary effects on the entire region. So one of the things we should probably talk about is how the construction stuff has been going. And I would assume that you have spent at least some time on site, on the construction site. How much of that has been possible for you?
Actually, my access there has been limited to, I would say, two visits, and one was actually a flyover. In a small plane. I have some connections at Baton International Airport. And
the glamorous life of a newspaper reporter.
And so we were able to do a flyover. Now, that was months back. And to be honest, it just looked kind of like a lot of dirt and a lot of mud being moved around. But a few months ago, they did a media day where we were allowed on site. And that culminated with there's this large hill, 30 to 35 foot hill near. Well, when you get onto the site, first of all, on a typical work day, it's really interesting because as you're driving in, there is an absolute caravan of big trucks lumbering in and out of that site, just moving aggregate, as they call it, stone, crushed stone, moving the crushed stone onto the site and then leaving to go get more of it. It's an absolute unending caravan in and out to just give you some idea of the level of activity there on a typical day. And you come in and immediately on your right, on the west side is what I would call almost a small village of construction trailers. And it's such an operation. It's just humming with activity and all of the time. And then there's a hill of, because so much dirt is being moved around, there's a hill made of topsoil immediately adjacent to this little construction trailer village. And so our visit culminated with a rather scary drive up this hill, which the roadway was none too flat or level for my liking. But then we got to the top and we were able to look out over this. And what you see is you see these roads of aggregate being laid down. You see these enormous building pads being laid down, these huge retention ponds in the corners of the site. And this is just Area 1. This is maybe 1,000 acres. We're talking about 3,000 acres in total. And you see these roadways and these building pads being laid down, the building pads where they're going to actually put the factories plural, not just one. And then at the far end of where you could see was this multipurpose building, this really large multipurpose building. And so I have not been there since, and from what I understand, the activity has died down somewhat for the winter. But that's kind of what it looked like from that perch at that time. One thing that has been to deviate slightly in our conversation, but one of the most fascinating things for me in this whole story has been the stimulus on development in the Racine area that Foxconn has constituted. The development projects, it's this time has been unlike any other that I've ever experienced in my career with Foxconn coming, because everyone knows you've got thousands and thousands of people coming. They're going to have to live somewhere. So housing has become a big concern, and you're seeing things start to happen. When I say concern, the Racine County Economic Development Corporation has spurred an initiative to try to simply create more housing in Racine County because there's not going to be enough of it. It's just abundantly clear. And so a guy named Jerry Franke, formerly from WISPARC, is sort of leading that charge on their behest. And so there was a housing summit in September, and he's trying to get out the message of, listen, folks, we need more. We need all kinds of housing. Municipalities, don't say no to apartments. We're going to need apartments. We're going to need market-rate housing. We're going to need townhouses. We're going to need single-family housing. We're going to need more of everything. And so that is something that there's a need, and whether it's going to be filled or not, no one knows. Jonathan Delagrave, the Racine County executive, has said it very well. He said, people are going to spend most of their disposable income where they live. So we want them in Racine County,
right?
Because that's where they're going to spend that money.
Yeah.
And we don't want them driving in from Northern Illinois.
We want them to eat lunch here. We want them to get their haircuts here.
Uh-huh.
We want them to buy their new suit here.
Yes. Pay their mortgages here, all of those things.
Right.
So the effect on development, the projects are coming. They're coming into downtown Racine. They're coming into uptown Racine. They're coming into the suburbs. And developers are nationally seeing this thing as an opportunity, and they want to get in on it. And any one of these projects is going to be measured in the tens of millions of dollars. And much of that money is going to be spent in Racine, on the lakefront, in various places. And so the city, which hadn't had a lot of wins in recent years, all of a sudden is getting these projects coming in. And it's just the Foxconn phenomenon is just, it's bigger than any of us realize.
Right. One way in which I, as you started talking about that, I started wondering about an issue that has been raised before in Racine and in other metropolitan spaces like that, which is the need for low-income housing. And one has to just take a moment at least and wonder if that very urgent concern might possibly get kind of shifted to the back burner in this rush to build all kinds of luxury townhouses and condos and so on for all of these employees, future employees of Foxconn. I wonder what kind of discussions are underway about that.
It's absolutely a legitimate question, because I'm hearing mostly about market rate housing projects. And, market rate in the Foxconn era is going to mean probably in a lot of cases $1,000 a month rent, $1,200 a month rent, rents that I couldn't afford, and many other people aren't going to be able to afford. There's at least one company that's addressing this in a somewhat modest way, and it's called Cardinal Capital Management, and that's the company that's hoping to build on the Ajax site. And the Ajax site is in Uptown Racine. It's a former industrial. It's most of a block. It borders the railroad tracks. And the latest variation of what Cardinal wants to build will be partly subsidized housing and partly market rate housing. So we're talking about 50 units of subsidized apartments there. And so there's one example where somebody is doing that. But we're going to need more of that for sure.
Absolutely.
You know, more workforce housing and lower priced housing.
I read your story, which I think ran on Christmas Day, where I think the headline was something about development explosion, and it was a long, long list. And even the poor, bedraggled Zahn's building in downtown Racine, which has been vacant, I think, since the early 1980s, might finally see some life.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yes, that was a very pleasant surprise. And that company hasn't yet announced their plans for it. That was an example of a developer in Milwaukee, Dominion Properties, which hadn't done any projects in Racine County prior to this, of Dominion just looking at downtown Racine, looking at the Foxconn situation and saying, we want to do something there. And so they bought that building, not even knowing whether they're going to do, you know, offices or apartments or boutique hotel or retail or some combination of those. And another downtown property that got bought up by a California group. There's three California, Pasadena, California area partners that teamed up. And they've been buying up many downtown buildings, including an old YMCA building that's directly from where I sit in the newsroom. I look right out at the building. It's across the street from us, but it was built as a YMCA and back in the 19-teens, and they're going to do a historic rehab and do some townhomes and do some apartments in there. Nobody had been interested. That was an either unused or underused building for decades. Well, now all of a sudden somebody from California says, hey, we kind of like that building. We're going to do something.
Yeah, there. Right. Well, and you think about what that means to like a place like the Yard Arm or Why Not, Uncorked.
Uncorked,
right there in that vicinity have that kind of influx. And then you start thinking about empty storefronts that are going to almost certainly be seeing life because of this influx.
There was another property on the north side of the river up against the lake, and it was an old manufacturing. Many of these are old manufacturing properties but in this case it was the Walker Manufacturing, and now another Milwaukee developer has bought that and announced a $50 million housing development there. This is like 12 months of incredible development projects getting some kind of traction, and I hadn't seen that many projects in my entire career as a business reporter.
Wow.
And you get them all in 12 months, and it's just going to continue.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Towards that end, back to the Mount Pleasant project, a couple of questions, but one that comes to mind related to what we were just talking about is that of roads. And the work on I-94, the exits or the interchanges that have been closed because of that construction, and calls now for perhaps Highway 11 and Highway 20 to be expanded because of all of this that's going on. How likely are we to see kind of an explosion in that direction as well?
Well, I think much of that is certainly underway. I don't know how many unannounced projects are yet to come, but there's no question that we got more federal money to get I-94 done more quickly because of Foxconn. That was, as you recall, that was going to be dragged out over 15 years, 16 years or something like that, and so the state DOT and at the federal level, they said, here, just get it done as fast as you can get it done. And, little old Braun Road, which almost nobody lived on or drove down, two-lane road, same thing with Highway KR. These are becoming multi-lane thoroughfares, as we speak. And so, that's a great point that it's not just on the Foxconn site, but it's all around it that all of these things are happening too.
Right. Well, and that's, of course, a concern for some people that part of what makes people want to live here starts to feel a little threatened.
Mm-hmm.
When you start expanding, you know, what was lovely Brown Road and, mm-hmm. and so on, that's just, it's going to look different. It's going to really feel different. And, of course, there's plenty of people who are ready to do whatever they can to try to hold on to as much natural beauty in this corner of the state as possible.
Yeah, you know, a top Foxconn official named Louis Wu, he's an assistant to Foxconn founder and owner Terry Goh and chairman Terry Goh. I've had two opportunities to talk to Louis face to face. He's the most sincere, nice gentleman you could want to meet. But he looked me at, we were on the topic of the environment in Foxconn, and he looked me in the eye and he said, you know, we don't want to disturb this. It's beautiful here. And you could just see he believed it. He loves it here. I don't know if you've had a chance, Greg, but have you seen the sort of a 3 or 4 or 5 minute movie that Foxconn has put out of its future campus?
No.
It's so worth your time to check this out. But you see, it's of course an animated or computer generated image, but you see the unfolding of the campus they plan to build, and it's if the real thing looks like what they show in this little movie, it's gorgeous.
Hmm.
You know, there are preserved wetlands, there's greenery, there are trees, there are, you know, it's a sure, there are these research buildings and you know, there's manufacturing buildings to come, but it shows a real preservation of a lot of green space there on the campus itself. It's the kind of place where I would want to work because, you know, at lunch hour I could go out and, you know, rest under a tree and have my lunch, and it would be beautiful. So it's not, you know, it's not going to be all asphalt and buildings.
Right. I remember you saying that even back in June when you visited, and I appreciated hearing that because certainly at the time, whenever a Foxconn story was run on television, almost all the stations were using the same little video clip, and it was a vehicle traveling along some gigantic building that said Foxconn along the side of it. And uh-huh. that you just imagine, oh, so that's what we're plopping into the middle of beautiful Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, and that's not really the story. Not that there aren't concerns to be raised, and of course we've talked about that too, for instance, that care is being made to restore actually more wetland area than mm-hmm. will be lost with
right.
this development. So there are strange ways in which there could actually at least be bits of environmental gain for the losses that we're going to sustain.
That was an interesting fact that came out, and that I reported, and that came out at one of these monthly briefing sessions that were held at the Mount Pleasant Village Hall, and at one of the earlier ones, a DNR official made the point that normally the state law requires that for every acre of wetland you destroy, you have to create 1.2 acres somewhere else or pay for the, you know, the creation of those. But in Foxconn's case, they've agreed to create 2 for everyone. That's right in the state contract. And so, you know, that's not that every man-made wetland is as good as a nature-made wetland, but if you're going to lose them, the ratio in this case is better.
Right, for sure, for sure. Just a couple quick questions. Are they still in the process of acquiring the last bits of land in this huge parcel? I mean, are there still holdouts?
I think they're down to, and this isn't something I've directly reported a lot on. My colleague Ricardo Torres has done more of that because that's more of what he covers Mount Pleasant and he covers the county, and that's more a government, you know,
sure.
the government acquires these and then they acquire them for Foxconn. Foxconn pays them back,
right.
which is how that is all working. I think it's down to, it might be down to just a single property, but certainly you wow. can count them on one hand in Area 1 where they're going to begin their manufacturing. And they're well underway of to acquiring the lands in Areas 2 and 3 as well to, you know, to put together 2,900 plus acres that they want for this enormous development.
Right. And, of course, another interesting development in the midst of all this is that Governor Walker went down to defeat, and we have a new governor, Tony Evers. Mm-hmm. I know politics is not your beat at the moment, at least, right. But I just wonder if you have a quick thought on how that changes things, if at all.
Yeah, well, that remains to be seen, of course. I know there was a recent meeting between Tony Evers, post his election. There was a recent meeting between him and Foxconn. So they're definitely talking. And, you know, there is a contract. The state, like it or not, there's a contract between the state and Foxconn. I don't know if he's going to, of course I don't know, I don't think anyone does, if he's going to actively try to undo any of what has been set up with Foxconn. I know he's been critical about the air permitting, for example, you know, the air pollution permitting. You know, that might be an example of an area where, who knows, perhaps the state can ratchet down a little bit more on what the DNR previously approved. I honestly am not sure whether that can be undone and made stricter. But for all his criticizing, at least they're talking, so I'm hoping that's a good sign. You know, we don't want to, I don't think very many people want to just stop the Foxconn development, because there are too many ways in which a lot of people are going to get jobs, are going to benefit. And I don't think that's probably the governor's intention to stop it. I think he just wants, from my reading of it, he just wants to make sure that all safeguards are in place, as they would be in place for any other company doing business in the state. And as far as I know, they are, but I guess he's going to try to make sure.
Hmm. Right. I suppose part of it is Foxconn has a somewhat checkered history, that there have been instances in the past where they have not followed through fully on promises made. And
In China, they, I freely admit, in China, they have a terrible history, you know. People trying to work for them, you know, basically in sweatshops and trying to kill themselves. And, you know, they've, what I've seen them doing here is it's hard to even fathom that it's the same company that was operating, you know, those kinds of manufacturing operations somewhere else in the world. But from what I've seen here, it's going to be nothing of the sort. You know, it's going to be highly roboticized. It's not going to be people straining their eyesight and putting little tiny pieces together with their fingers. That's not what they're building here.
Right. Sounds like a new chapter, and one hopes maybe in some ways at least the company has evolved from where it once was and the practices that it in which it once engaged. Well, it's an incredible story, and I'm so appreciative to you for the clear reporting that you have given to us in the Racine Journal Times, covering the story of the century, the story of your career in so many respects, and touching on so many of our lives, including, we didn't even get to the colleges and universities, we mentioned them briefly, but how they are very likely all to be part of this unfolding story.
So Gateway certainly is. Gateway is plugged into this whole workforce training thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we will continue to watch this with great, great interest, and I look forward to having you back on the morning show to help us understand this story better. Michael Burke, business reporter for the Racine Journal Times, joining me today on the morning show here on WGTD. We want to mention that a week from tomorrow, on Thursday, the 17th of January, we will have on the morning show Dave DeGroot, who is Mount Pleasant Village president, Maureen Murphy, who is village administrator, and Claude Lois, who is the Foxconn project director, for what promises to be a very interesting follow-up conversation about the Foxconn development. Tomorrow on the morning show, Nan Calvert pays her first monthly visit to the morning show in 2019. And with her will be Casey Eggleston, talking about the Fund for Lake Michigan. On Friday, I look forward to a visit from a faculty colleague of mine from Carthage, Dr. Gerald Mast from the Political Science Department, talking about the current government shutdown and what is likely ahead for President Trump in the second half of his first presidential term. On Monday, a conversation that I just recorded last night with an extraordinary 12-year-old entrepreneur from Racine, Alex